Our next speaker is Clint Chung from Oregon State University.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the chance to share a few ideas. Everything that you've seen so far is real specific, real tied down to particular crop or particular situation. And I'm going to talk more in general. And the reason is, you know, I'll probably kick the bucket tomorrow and need to try to extract a few wisdom along with my wisdom teeth. I apologize because I haven't emphasized salinity, which a number of you talked about. And probably that is due to the fact that every like 4 or 5 years we have a wet winter, and the salinity part is just a little bit more out of my focus because we get enough moisture to push salt downward. In this water utilization and management area, we have all these considerations of crop yield, quality, and productivity. Certainly the case for the onions and stevia and potatoes and other things that I work with regularly, medicinal crops. We have the efficiency of water and nutrient inputs. We have the whole water quality business, the minimization of the off-site site effects. And we have this ability to maybe cope with uncertainty of the future. Now, all of these are intertwined with each other. And most of us aren't considering our inability to cope and deal with the future, but it's certainly related to all these other factors. And so we have really a very multidisciplinary area. And if we consider the Western United States, the area that I work is in Eastern Oregon, and it's in this real dry area here. We can't keep up with you guys down in here, but we're pretty close, about 9 or 10 inches of rainfall a year. And we have winter precipitation, largely snow. We get water collects and runoff, and it's collected in reservoirs. And some years the reservoir is real full, and sometimes we got 6 main reservoirs in our county. The county is bigger than New Hampshire or Vermont, and has 33,000 people. 3,000 of them are in a state penitentiary. So there's years when our reservoirs overflow, and then we go 2, 3, 6, 7 years where they don't fill up. And it's really problematic. So the effects of lack of rainfall and a lot of heat are already upon us, not some future risk. And then the water is delivered by gravity over the whole valley. Well, when I got interviewed 34 years ago for director of the station, I walked up on the hill. They took me on my interview up on the hill, looked over, and I said, oh, my goodness. Here we have all this potential energy, and yet we're delivering all this water in excess, full of all sorts of sediment, nutrient, and bacteria. And so, anyway, the potential was sure there to do something different. So, in our approach to deal with all of these water resource problems and opportunities, we need to figure out all the problems, and they're related to inefficient water use, links to crop yield and quality, or economic opportunities for yield and quality, because those really drive adoption. Nitrate leaching, erosion, sediment loss, and bacteria delivery. So we have the opportunity to consider alternative irrigation systems, or even, you know, something beyond these. We have the opportunity to develop smart specifications and maintenance. And the methods and all must match the soil properties, like you saw in the celery, where he was applying a function of crop ET, then the soil was almost getting saturated each time, or close to saturation. We have to have smart evapotranspiration replacement. So this graph just shows several strategies and how they fairly closely match ET. And then we have to have smart irrigation onset criteria, such as the celery. And this data, we compiled this data in 2011 for about 40 different crops. This just starts off an alphabetical list. Then we really need to fine-tune the criteria locally. And you could say, well, isn't celery celery? Or isn't onions or potatoes onions or potatoes? Well, and actually the ideal criteria ends up differing based on the irrigation system and the soil type. So this is a selection of optimal irrigation criteria by soil water tension and soil water potential for potato. There are opportunities for irrigation deficits where a crop has certain phases where it doesn't really require as much water, or it's actually enhanced by a certain amount of stress. For example, alfalfa seed, you have higher yields if you have considerable stress during flowering and seed set, of all things, partially due to better bee activity. And wine grapes, and even certain very water-sensitive crops can have a period of time when they're not sensitive. And a smart use of fertilizer is tied right in. If you've got control of the irrigation amount and you're matching or less than ET, then you have the opportunity to meet the crop's needs and optimize yield without using nearly as much nitrogen fertilizer frequently as the university guides. So our optimum yield of onions and potatoes in our area and among our growers is less than the university fertilizer guides. So there's a whole strategy to optimize the nutrition and reduce nitrate leaching and contamination. And our growers in our area have dropped the amount of average nitrate in the groundwater by half in the last 20 years, all through cooperation and not any rules. They've also dropped the amount of herbicide contamination by about 90%. So another whole strategy is considering modifying the soil surface properties. So either straw mulch, polyacrylamide, some anti-evaporation product. There's a few out there that are being tested. Reduced tillage, plastic mulch. And we found a number of those to be quite effective. So every PowerPoint presentation has to have a herendogram. And so this is my candidate for herendogram of the week. And these are different types of initiatives that we've done on nutrient and water use efficiency over the last 34 years, and when we've done the years that we've done them, and lots of different things. And what we found is that the aspects where we've married things to demonstrations that are quite observable, that act in the profitability of the grower, and are things that aren't too complex, or at least not too complex at that moment. The grower might make it very complex as they adopt our drip irrigation strategies for onions, but at least not too big a step at once. Then those ideas become adopted. So it has a lot to do with listening to people, sharing ideas with people. And so anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to share these ideas with you. Thank you. There's a lot of detailed experiments on a bunch of different crops behind all this stuff, but that's sort of an overview. Yeah, go ahead.
Clint, you did a lot of work on use of soil moisture sensors, and so how you see your growers, the adoption of soil moisture sensors by your growers, and what would be the importance of that?
Yeah, we had an awful lot of adoption a couple of different times, especially when we had those Hansen units that would show a live graph, and he went out of production of those. So we had, you know, several hundred fields, I think, with those. It's down since that's gone out of manufacture. But most of the drip irrigated onions are followed by soil moisture sensors. If you could share me your publication.
Which publication is on that topic?
Writing a new review. Yes, question back here.
Yeah, I was just curious. I mean, obviously you had a high adoption rate and a lot of change in your area. So what did you find, like, extension-wise, is one of the best ways to relay these practices and create that change?
Well, we involved growers from the very beginning. And the first projects that I had were funded by EPA and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And I went to the various growers associations and I asked them for money for the same projects that I was proposing to the other agencies, so they could argue with me about what the treatments ought to be and what we ought to be doing and whatever. So the outreach started before we did the work. And we actually got quite a bit of implementation before we got any results, because some of the things just made sense in terms of timing of fertilizer and things like that. And so we had people and growers involved from the very beginning and outset. We always had annual multiple annual meetings and multiple field days and printing of our report. And we used to put out 650 copies of our annual report. People don't pick that up anymore because they just find the stuff on their cell phone. But a lot of involvement. The growers adopt things based on what makes money for them. So if one designs one's experiments in ways that will increase yield and quality, that will save inputs, you can't hardly stop it. The ideas will get implemented. And make everything observable. It's right out there. And have extension people have areas as well.